Welcome to this week's teaching from Exchange Church in the heart of Belfast.
Hi there, and it's really great to be with you to continue our series here at Exchange on Bible heroes, normal people who encountered God, had their lives changed and impacted the lives of others and ultimately impacted history. And today we're going to talk about Joshua. And you know, we can learn so much from so many of the people throughout the Bible, so many things. And sometimes you might think, what can we learn about these guys? Is there something about somebody who lived 3,500 years ago like Joshua that I can relate to me today? But there's so much, and hopefully you'll be blessed. I've been really encouraged as I've prepared for this and thought about it. And we're going to think about Joshua, who lived a life of service. He fought battles. He won great victories. He was a man who was clear on his vision and a man who achieved what God called him to. He was born in Egypt, and under the slavery of the Egyptians, his father was called Nun, and they named him Hosea. And so he was one of the few people, actually only two people, who came out of the land of Egypt, went through the wilderness, and actually stepped into the promised land. Him and his colleague Caleb were the only two out of that whole nation who made it through. But he knew what it was like to grow up in Egypt. We reckon he was probably about 18 or 20 whenever he left Egypt. So he had grown up in his formative years being oppressed, knowing what life was like as a second-class citizen, facing daily injustice, prejudice, hardship. And it was just remarkable then that God takes this young man, shapes him and he becomes Moses' sort of right-hand man, assistant throughout the wilderness, and then shapes him into the great leader to lead the children of Israel in to possess the promised land. And what I want to do today is really try to get a feel for him, to see how he saw the world, how his encounter with God changed him, and how that can help us know God better. I want us to think particularly about his character, and what was it about that prepared him for what God called him for. We'll look at a couple of pivotal moments in his life that shaped not only him, but shaped all of history. But, you know, I was thinking about this a lot through the week, and I was thinking, you know, what is it about Joshua that stands out for me? And as I read through the account of his life in Exodus right through to the end of the book of Joshua itself, the one word that just kept coming up for me over and over again was this word of duty. Now, you might think that's a little bit strange, but he was a man who knew what his job was. He was a man of duty, a man who was consistent. He was introduced to us in Exodus 17 and verse 9, whenever he led the army of the children of Israel to fight against the Amalekites. We're told he was Moses' assistant, his right-hand man. He was there right through, and then you follow his life right through until the last chapter of Joshua, you see a man who knew what his job was. He was a man of purpose, a man who didn't just talk the talk, but he walked the walk. You know, the world's full of people, isn't it, who love to talk about what they're going to do. They'll tell you that, oh, you got to follow your passion, do whatever makes you happy. Let the North Star of your actions be the state of your emotions. Whatever you feel is right, then do it. Passion is the way to go. But Joshua, he's a rare man that even though he was fearful at times and constantly aware of his own weakness, he was able to set aside, if you like, how he felt to pursue what God had called him to be. Because you know what? A life of purpose beats a life of passion every time, hands down. Passion will wane. Good times come, good times go, but your calling remains. And Joshua lived a called life. He lived a life that was beyond himself, beyond what he liked. And I want to live a life of purpose. I want to live a life that isn't characterized just by what I think or feel. A life that is beyond what I can achieve in my own and my preferences. Being part of something bigger, something anchored in purpose. Because too many times we just settle for, this is as good as it gets, I'm just settled, this is it. Joshua didn't settle. And so if we look at the life of Joshua, can we learn lessons to help us say, can we live a life of greater purpose? And so there's four real key principles that I want to think about. The first thing about Joshua's life, and I've touched on it already, he was faithful and consistent in the small things. For 40 years, he served Moses. He stayed by his side. He ministered at the tabernacle. It says when the presence of God fell around the tabernacle, everybody else departed. Moses was communing with God, and Joshua stood at the door of the tabernacle. He organized things. He prepared. He listened. And you know, the Bible is really strong in its message that God values consistency and faithfulness in the small things. Zechariah 4 and verse 10, the New Living Translation puts it like this. He says, do not despise these small beginnings, for the Lord rejoices to see the work begin. Don't despise the small beginnings. God rejoices to see things start. What's God starting in your life? What are the small things you're doing? What are the things that you might think are inconsequential, that are the turning up and doing it over and over again? Don't despise these things. These are really important factors. These are things in which your character is formed and you're shaped, and these are the things that shape Joshua. In fact, Jesus told us in Luke 16 and verse 10, he said, whoever is faithful with very little will also be faithful with much. Whoever is faithful with very little will also be faithful with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. That's Jesus. Being faithful in the little things, the small things, being consistent. Because turning up every day when it's hard to turn up is harder than the big gestures. Big gestures are easy. Turning up and doing something grand, anybody can do that. But showing up day after day when no one else is looking and nobody seems to be caring and nothing seems to be changing. What's God got for you today? What are the small things that you've got to pay attention to? I'd encourage you to embrace the small things. Give them your attention. Celebrate the everyday. Acknowledge the unseen person. Look at that person who just seems that everybody else is ignoring and give them your attention. Speak words of blessing to people. Make the right choices. Pay your taxes. Show up in the right way to your wife, to your husband, for your children, to the people around you. Show up every day. When things get tough, turn up. Don't turn your nose up. Turn your sleeves up and get stuck in. The little things. Don't despise the day of small beginnings. Because who you become ultimately is the sum of your choices. What you choose every day in the little things ultimately builds your character and who you are. And Joshua was faithful in the small things. And you know what? The longer I live, the more convinced I am of the value of consistency. People you can depend on who are always the same, who always show up, you know, who are always there. The longer I live, the more important that becomes. And it's a lesson that I've learned over these last years. Joshua wasn't in a hurry to be the big dog. He didn't need the big job. You know, I see people in my job, in my career, in life generally, and they're rushing at 100 miles an hour to get to the big job, to get to the big chair. And they rush so fast there that they arrive there only to find that they don't have the skills, the experience, and most importantly, they don't have the character to thrive in their new role. So what happens? They frantically hold on to it. They grasp onto it. They protect it with all they have. They struggle to keep their head above water, and their life is this thing constantly on a treadmill. But Joshua, because that character and experience, consistency was built over time, he was there, and when the job came, he was perfectly positioned for it. Where are you today? What do you need to build? Don't be in a rush to get into the big chair. God will bring his timing in for you if you're consistent in the small things. I 100% believe that. So, well, he was consistent on those things. The other thing was that he recognized his limitations. Moses was dead. The great leader of Israel, he was gone. The man who knew God face to face, the prince of Egypt, God's friend. And here Joshua is. He's standing on the verge of the Jordan. All the people are looking to him, and he clearly is going, oh, no way, I'm not up to the job. He was acutely aware of his own weakness. And we read in Joshua chapter 1, first five verses, it says this, that after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the River Jordan into the land I'm about to give them to the Israelites. Listen to this. I will give you, this is God speaking to Joshua, I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. Then on to verse 5. No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors to give to them. Isn't that brilliant? And in fact, in this discourse between Joshua and God, God repeats three times. He says to Joshua, be strong and of good courage. Be strong and very courageous. He repeats it again and again. Now, God doesn't waste words. And if he's saying that to him, clearly Joshua felt weak and afraid. And he knew that the calling that God had called him to, God spoke and says, you're going to need to be strong. You're going to need to have courage. Not blind courage, not courage that's that sort of give it a lash and see how we go, but that a courage that was based on three key promises of God. We read two of them there a moment ago. God promised to give them the land. He said, I'm going to give you the land that I promised. It wasn't Joshua's idea. He wasn't there saying, hey, lads, let's go. I think we should take Canaan. God had promised it to him. So what's God promising to you? What is God's promises? Because it's not your problem then. Secondly, he promised that his presence would be with him. God promised that he would be with him. And Joshua had seen how Moses, he says, the Bible says that he was a man who knew God face to face, Moses, and the close relationship that Moses had with God. And in fact, there's a great bit in Exodus 33 where Moses is talking to God, and God says to go up and I'll go with you. And here in Exodus 33, verses 13 through 15, the Lord replied, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. And then this is great. Then Moses said to him, if your presence does not go with us, do not send us up from here. How will anyone know that you are pleased with me unless and with your people unless you go with us? What else will distinguish me and your people from all the other people on the face of the earth? The differentiating factor for Moses, for the people, was God's presence. Moses said, I am not shifting from this place unless you go with me, God. And then God had spoken to Joshua and said, as I was with Moses, I'm going to be with you. It's the same for us. Do not take a step anywhere unless you're sure that God is with you. It is the thing that sets you apart, that makes you different, is that you carry the presence of God. I'd encourage you to experience the presence of God, to carry the presence of God, and minister the presence of God to other people. And then God speaks in verse 8 of Joshua 1, and he says, keep the book of law always on your lips, meditate on it day and night so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. So the third thing was that he lived rooted in God's word. God had promised it, God's presence was with him, and it's God's word that sustained him. These three things also underpin all of our lives, everything we need. So if we're stepping forward, we realize that it's not our battle, it's God's. And that's really the third thing. The third thing, point that I want to get, is that Joshua realized that this was God's mission, not his. This is absolutely central to everything that Joshua achieved. And there's a great account. This is absolutely outstanding. So give you context. They've crossed the River Jordan. Andrew and Penny talked about that a number of weeks ago on the Wednesday night. And they've crossed the River Jordan. Joshua's standing before they go up to Jericho. And he moves forward and he meets this man with a sword in his hand. And this is the account. It says, Joshua 5, verse 13. Now, when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword in his hand. Joshua went up and asked him, are you for us or for our enemies? I love this. Neither, he replied. But as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come. Then Joshua fell face down to the ground in reverence and asked him, what message does my Lord have for his servant? The commander of the Lord's army replied, take off your sandals, for the place where you're standing is holy. And Joshua did so. I love that response of the commander of the Lord's army. Are you for us? Are you for them? And he answers, neither. We live in such a binary world at the minute. Either you're for me or you're against me. Are you for us or are you for them? Joshua said. We see the problem with that position is, and we see it today more than ever, that view means that the world revolves around me and my views, what I'm for, my battles, my position. You're either for me or you're against me. You're either this or you're that. You're either one race or another, one religion or another, one gender or another. You're for this or you're against this. And God says, no, I have a different way. You're for me. The key point in this is that it's not about you. This wasn't Joshua's battle. This was God's battle. It's not your cause. It's not your battle, Joshua. It's God's battle. How often do we set a trajectory and come up with an idea and then say, God, I've got a great idea. Come on and bless me. You ever do that? How strange it is to think that God's sitting there waiting for us to come up with a good idea, like come up with an answer and then go, oh, now can you bless this? Asking God, now, are you for me, God, or are you against me? We mightn't say it, but often we think it, don't we? The real question is, which battle are you fighting in? Are you fighting in God's battle? Are you living for his calling and for his purpose? Because it's bigger than any of us. It's bigger than me, and it's bigger than you. We get to be part of God's big story. We are not the story. I am not the story. Tell you this morning, you're not the story. He is the story, and it's his story, and history is all about him. It applies to everything, big and small. Joshua had amazing victories in his life. The Bible tells us that he had one defeat. And it was one defeat against the smallest of foes. Just after Jericho, where they had won the great victory, the children of Israel came to another small city called Ai. It's spelled Ai. In Joshua 7, you can read about it. And he sent a reconnaissance group out. And they came back and said, it's really small. Don't worry about it. A couple of thousand people should do the job. We've got this. It's easy. So they sent out 3,000 people. What happened? They got routed out of there. They were defeated and 36 men lost their lives. See, the children of Israel had forgotten that the walls of Jericho were flattened by them walking around, blowing trumpets and shouting, and that God gave it into their hands. How often do we compartmentalize our life? How often do we think, well, I did that and God blessed me. Now, I think it's all about me. Or do we say, well, here's the big things. God, I need you for the big thing, the big job, the big family trouble. I need you for my health. I need you for these challenging situations when it's all hitting the fan. God, I need you. But actually, these other things I've got to cover, so don't worry yourself, God. Don't stress yourself. I've got it handled. There's a really important lesson here. We need God for everything. Everything. Nothing is too small that we are able to do it in our own strength. Nothing in our life is too small that we can do it in our own life. F.B. Meyer wrote that there is nothing small in Christian life. Nothing so small that we can combat it in our own strength. The victories we have won in fellowship with God have imparted no inherent might to us. We are as weak as ever. And as soon as we are brought into collision with the least of our enemies, apart from him, we shall inevitably go down before the shock. We need God in everything. Part of grace is that God does it for us and with us, and it's not about us. It's all about him. I have no strength or ability of my own. And then we contrast that when you move into Joshua 10. There's this amazing time where the five kings had come together and they were going to front up and attack the children of Israel. And God says to him, to Joshua in verse 8 of chapter 10, he says, don't fear them, for I have delivered them into your hand. And so Joshua takes the children of Israel, they march all night, and they attack. And what happens is that all of the enemies, they start to flee and to spread. And as they're fleeing, God rained down giant hailstones, and it tells us that more people were killed by being hit by these hailstones than were killed with the sword. This is a great picture, I think. So there's Joshua and the children of Israel fighting the battle, and God is raining down and fighting with them, side by side, if you like. And Joshua realizes that they're on the verge of a big victory, that this is something special. And he recognizes that the day is starting to pass. And he says, if I just could get more hours in this day, we could finish this off. And he says, on the day, and it tells us in Joshua 10, 12 to 14, on the day the Lord gave the Amorites over to Israel, Joshua said to the Lord in the presence of Israel, sun stand still over Gibeon, and you moon over the valley of Ajalon. So the sun stood still, and the moon stopped, till the nation avenged itself of its enemies, as it is written in the book of Joshua. The sun stopped in the middle of the sky and delayed going down about a full day. There has never been a day like it before or since, a day when the Lord listened to a human being. Surely the Lord was fighting for Israel. Do you know, have you ever had special days? Days when you think, I wish this could just keep on going, where you're in a sweet spot. Days when things happen, when purpose, passion, and power collide, when your faith is full and you wish that these days would go on forever. But they can only be lengthened for a purpose. They're unique, they're unprecedented, and in this you're able to ask and do things that have never happened before. These are the days when you pick up mountains and throw them into the sea. These are the days, don't let these days pass you by. Joshua said, I am not going to let this day pass me by. I am going to squeeze every drop from a day like this. I'm not going to miss this opportunity to move to a new place. Don't just settle. What day are you in? If God is blessing you, get the best out of it. Because God can bring more light into a situation. He can build and keep momentum. He can continue to shine until a thing is fully accomplished. Things will be different when the windows of opportunity remain open and the windows of heaven are there to bless you. The scene is set for you to advance. Through it all, God is doing things on your behalf that you can't even see. God was out there doing all the things, helping, assisting. Can you see that partnership? It wasn't Joshua's battle, it was God's. The final and fourth point then was he stuck the course even when no one else would. We get to the last two chapters of Joshua, chapters 23 and 4. We see Joshua as an old man at the end of his life. The land had been conquered, the people were settled, they were at peace. Joshua calls them all together and he makes a great speech. And in that speech, he recounts God's faithfulness throughout the ages. He tells the story of how God had brought them out of Egypt and had been with them and blessed them. And he challenges the people to recommit to God. Do you know, I read it and overwhelmingly, whether this is right or not, I pick up a sense of sorrow with Joshua. Everybody else is gone. All his peers except Caleb had died in the wilderness because they rebelled. His great mentor and leader, he was gone. And even though the people had come in and possessed the land, it was clear that many had reverted to worship local gods. And there he stands, an old man, at the end of his life, the last of a generation, the last link with Egypt. Eyewitness to so much. He had seen deliverance from Egypt. He had seen pillars of fire and cloud. He had seen water flow from rock, manna fall from heaven. He had crossed the Jordan on dry land. He had had amazing military conquests. He had seen the sun stand still in the sky. And I see a man who wants all of Israel to experience what he's experienced. To know the God who never fails. He tells us there that Joshua, as he's speaking, he said, not one word that God spoke to me has failed. Not one promise has not come to pass. Everything God said he would do, he has done. He wants them to see that God is faithful. He is a consistent Father who will bring you through. That we have a God bigger and stronger than anything. I believe that Joshua's faithfulness, Joshua's consistency, is found in his experience of God. The faithfulness and consistency of the God who never changes, who is always good. God is always good wherever you are today. Whatever you're experiencing, whatever you're questioning, God is always good. Whatever promise God has given you and you're questioning it, not a word that God speaks will not come to pass. He always comes through. He will never leave you. He will never forsake you. And I think that Joshua's commitment, his duty, is a reflection of his dealing, of God's dealing with him, his experience of God. Because that's what happens, isn't it? As I behold him, I am changed to be like him. As I see God and know who he is, it shifts and changes me. It shapes me rather than people and circumstances and all the other stuff. As I spend more time in God's presence, that shapes me and changes me. And there's that great bit, the famous part in the last chapter of Joshua. He said, choose this day who you will serve. He's saying that to the whole nation. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. As for me and my house. What's he saying? I don't care if everybody else turns away. I know God. I love him. He's been faithful to me. And I am happy enough that if everybody forsakes him, I will never forsake the one who has never forsaken me. I will not turn my back. He had been a lone voice before as he went in to spy out with Caleb and the other 10 spies. The people saw the story of Joshua's life. They saw his witness of faith. And the whole people said, we will serve the Lord. And Joshua reiterates it over and over again. And three times they commit to serving God. So I hope that's been a blessing to you. It's been a real blessing to me. I want to be somebody who experiences the fullness of God in my life. I want to be someone who lives for purpose. I want to be somebody who steps past what I can do. I want to fight his battle, not mine. I don't want to set the agenda. I want to let God set the agenda. I see a man who experienced the awe and majesty of God on Mount Sinai, in the tabernacle, in battles, and in response to God's faithfulness, I see a man who devoted his life to the service of one to whom all honor and service is due. This wasn't a life that he lived for himself. It wasn't a life that he lived in the pursuit of power, but he had his eyes inclined upwards. His heart set on a calling beyond anything that you could ever achieve by your own strength. Joshua was a man of duty, yeah, but he placed no faith in his own ability. He relied on God. He ran a good race. He stuck the course. He finished strong. There is so, so much we can learn from Joshua's life. So what takeaways would I like to leave with you this morning? I'd encourage you, experience the glory of God in your life. It's all about him. It's not about me. And once you've encountered God, let him come in and let him give you purpose in your life. Live for his purpose. commit to it. Turn up. Pay attention to the small things. Rely on him. You can't do it yourself. Stay close to God. Let his strength guide you. Let his strength take you to remarkable places and help you achieve remarkable things. Let the one who is faithful, all times, who will never leave you or forsake you, let him be the source of your consistency. If you feel that you're up and down, if you feel that you can't go forward, let me tell you this morning, God will never leave you. He will never forsake you. He is for you. So, in closing, Joshua, so much to learn. I'd really encourage you to take time to read the book of Joshua, to read some of the stories of what he's done. A great man of faith who stepped forward, who put into practice, but who followed God, didn't rely on his own strength, was consistent, lived a life of purpose for a God who would never let him down. He won't let you down either. I'd invite you to spend time with him, get to know him more, and live to the fullness of the purpose that God has for your life. I hope that's been good for you. I hope that's been a blessing to you. I've really enjoyed sharing it with you this morning. So be blessed. Have a great week in Jesus' name.